V plus 4. Council Office, New Kerguelen. With focus in his eyes, if not quite a spring in his step, Dan McCarthy walked into what was easily the most ornate room he had seen on New Kerguelen so far. There were no windows, with the four walls instead positively covered in decorative shapes and swirls in several pastel colors. The art, if that was what it was, truly looked like nothing Dan had seen before. The best he could do was liken it to a curious cross between floral wallpaper and tribal tattoos. What truly caught his eye, however, was the group of seven extraterrestrial beings sitting around a circular glass table on low glass stools. All turned to see him, and each wore a differently colored tunic, seeming to indicate the specialized group they represented. Dan saw a sky blue tunic as worn by the squadron, but there was no messenger white to be seen. As soon as he wondered about this, he heard the simple and unfortunate explanation that the representative from the interpreter grouping to which they belonged had been suspended following the elders' deaths. As the messengers had told Dan before, they were blamed for this catastrophic event, having failed to see any signs of a problem until it was too late, until the elders had become so unresponsive that they couldn't offer any advice on how to help them recover full function. Dan asked quickly about the nature of the groupings and received a reply built around the term hereditary path and the point that everyone on New Kerguelen was born into one of eight specializations and was raised from birth in accordance with its specific needs. This system had been put in place by the elders long ago, the messenger said, but long after the passing of the forefathers who created them. The word hereditary made Dan think of this structure as something of a caste system, and he considered it decidedly suboptimal. Streaming citizens into set groups from birth ruled out anyone from excelling in any discipline other than that which was thrust upon them. Dan could only imagine the geniuses and breakthroughs Earth would have gone without had such a system been in place during the past few hundred years. But as conceptually interesting as this was, he marked it down as one more thing to think and ask about once his real work was done. "So I guess we're standing and they're sitting?" Tara said. "Please," a messenger said, walking to the table and tapping its surface. "You want us to stand on the table?" Dan asked. The reply came back that it was a platform rather than a table, but this hardly changed how bizarre it felt in his mind. He was then struck by a thought of wonder as to what the aliens might make of the layout of the U.S. Congress or a British-style parliament when seeing it for the first time, and suddenly this elevated setup didn't seem quite so ridiculous. Dan helped Tara up first and then took a step to join her. It was impossible not to feel like he was dreaming, and this was a feeling he didn't fight. If anything, it helped to counter the overwhelmed feelings that came with considering just how real the situation truly was. "Our counterparts from other groupings lack the direct ability to understand your thoughts and words," a messenger said, handing Dan and Tara a cable each. He thought he knew what came next, but the instruction that followed was for each of them to attach it to their index finger via a kind of semi-adhesive covering. To Dan, this didn't seem altogether dissimilar from the old-fashioned rubber thumbs that bank tellers used to wear when counting large quantities of money. As they painlessly attached the cables to their fingers in the same manner, far more welcome than the invasive insertions they'd imagined, Dan and Tara watched the messengers attach the other ends of the cables to the table. Then, to their moderate surprise, the messengers handed each of the counselors a cable and encouraged them to attach them to their own fingers. Dan had already known that the other aliens lacked the messengers' communicational abilities, but he was only now coming to see that this table was clearly anything but decorative. The sight of seven aliens attaching a small device to themselves in order to hear and understand the words of two foreign visitors brought to mind old television footage from inside the United Nations, where countless delegates would listen through earphones to the speeches of others translated into their own native language. It wasn't quite like that, of course, but the thought was there. The silence in the room would have been eerie if Dan had noticed it, but the sound of his heart was all he could hear. Although no sounds were actually made, the silence effectively ended when one of the messengers began proceedings by thanking the counselors for allowing them back into the room and promising that they wouldn't regret it. No replies came into Dan or Tara's minds, but they couldn't be sure whether this was because the counselors neglected to say anything or whether their brains were simply incapable of receiving their thoughts. Our friends from Earth would like to make a case for pursuing active cooperation between our races to an extent the elders consistently advised against, the messenger continued. And we beg you to consider their words. Earth is not a perfect planet, as we know, but it is populated by many good and true beings. We come to you today with two of them. The messenger gestured towards Dan and Tara, who were side by side on the table rather than back to back. They each looked down at the faces on one side, forcing smiles through the impossible awkwardness of their elevated positions without even knowing if smiles would be understood. Words were the way forward, quite clearly, so Dan McCarthy cleared his throat and spoke from the heart. We come in peace, Dan said, fighting the urge to grin at finally being able to appropriately open a conversation with this age-old classic line. He spoke out loud primarily because he figured that doing so would focus his mind on choosing the right words and would reduce the chance of any imprecision or misunderstanding. We come to usher in an era of active cooperation that will help you with your great shelter, and we come at the request of your interpreters who have already done so much to help us. Upon completing this sentence and waiting several seconds for some kind of reply, it hit Dan that he wasn't going to get any feedback at all during what was clearly going to be more of a speech than a conversation. I don't know what your problem actually is here, Tara interjected, taking over in a fairly sharp tone that gave Dan cause for concern. You need help with this shelter, and if it's just a technical construction thing, humanity can almost definitely give you that help. What else do you want us to say? What else do you need us to say? We have a problem of our own right now because you guys are causing it, she continued, pointing quite aggressively at the blue tunic-wearing representative of New Kerguelen's squadron cast. But your interpreters? These are the guys you should be listening to. They saved us from the comet and they brought us here while there's still a chance to save you from yourselves. Get out of their way. Dan glanced at Tara, wondering what the hell she was doing. But then he caught sight of the messengers out of the corner of his eye and saw that both of them were nodding. Was this what they wanted? Passion? Let me tell you a story you might not know, Dan said, following his gut. Once upon a time, a comet almost killed us. Once upon a time, your elders almost led it. If your interpreters hadn't made a passionate case to the elders in favor of intervention, just like I'm making a passionate case to you right now in favor of pursuing active interplanetary cooperation, I'd be dead. Tara would be dead. Neither of us would be here to make this case, and no one on Earth would be alive to help you with your shelter. Your elders got it wrong until your interpreters won them round. And if that doesn't tell you that life can go on just fine without elders so long as you listen to and trust each other, I don't know what will. The silence and lack of physical movement that followed what Dan had hoped would be a decisive point told him that more was needed. He took a few seconds to think of how to phrase it, then spoke again. You're an intelligent race with free will, bound only by the decision-making restrictions you've placed upon yourselves. Your elders may have been wise and knowledgeable, but they were bound by limitations you don't face. Unlike the purely rational elders, you can be rational, but you weren't limited to only consider rational concerns. Ethically, morally, or however you want to frame it, you are capable of more. You are capable of better. You see, your interpreters wanted to save Earth. They wanted to save us. Motivated by a desire to help for the sake of helping, they presented the issue to the elders in a way that made a rational case for intervention. They argued that by protecting the only other intelligent race known to yours, the elders would be keeping around a potential source of future help should the shoe ever be on the other foot. Exactly like it is now. Your interpreters were able to use rationality for good, but only because they were able to think beyond it. If they had taken the elders' initial answer that an intervention wasn't justified, Earth would have been destroyed, and I wouldn't be standing here now promising all the help my planet can offer. This time, Dan felt done. He didn't know what the hell else to say, and no one else was saying anything. Until that was, Tara stepped back in. There's wisdom and there's kindness, she said, and your elders were only capable of the former. Your interpreters, on the other hand, showed that kindness is stronger than cold rationality. And whether you know it or not, kindness is within you too. Kindness is also within the people of Earth, so long as you don't pick out the worst possible example like your squadron did, and the people of Earth want to help you. Please, get out of your own way and let us help you. Squadron Commander, if you are the commander, just call back your guys before they do something they can't take back, okay? The alien in question, sitting bolt upright in its sky-blue tunic, offered no reaction whatsoever to being directly addressed in this manner. And everyone else, she went on, wake up and reinstate your interpreters to this council where they belong. And while you're at it, let this council take the place of your elders. You've already been accustomed to voting on which questions to ask the elders and how to apply their answers, so just start asking those questions of each other. That's what we do. It's not perfect, but we're still around, and all we want to do is cooperate to make life better for everyone. People from this planet saved Earth when the comet was coming, and people from Earth can save this planet before the shelter is beyond repair. But that's just saving each other. Imagine all of the things we can share and achieve when we work together on progress instead of problems. That's the way I want to move forward. Together. One of the messengers then surprised everyone, and no one more so than its human guests, by beginning a slow and physically labored round of applause. Its partner joined in, with both looking like toy monkeys clapping their cymbals, but Dan didn't know quite whether the messengers thought applause was a sign of approval, or simply what people did at the conclusion of a speech. Without further context, beyond what they had seen at the edge of the cornfield prior to the journey, when they had first copied this human action, he could see that the messengers would have had a fair reason to believe either. In either case, however, they clearly thought the speech was over. I'm so glad you came, Dan whispered out of the side of his mouth, drawing a warm smile from Terra. As silence returned, the messengers removed the cables from the table. With his connection to the other aliens broken, Dan asked the first and only question in his mind. How did it go? Terra waited just as eagerly for the answer. Even before an answer came, however, the alien in the sky-blue tunic rose from its chair and left the room. While one messenger gathered the discarded cables from the surface of the table, the other positioned itself directly in front of Dan and Terra. Reacting to the squadron representative's exit, a slow and very deliberate smile spread across its face. It wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing facial expression Dan had ever seen, but it sent a flood of joyous relief coursing through his veins like none before it.
The squadron will be gone from Earth within minutes, the messenger said. It is done, friends. You have succeeded.
Terra excitedly wrapped her arms around Dan and jumped up and down like she was celebrating a last-second sporting victory. This victory was more important than any other she could imagine, and the joy was expressed with suitable physicality. After 5 seconds or so, she let go of Dan and turned to the messenger, opening her arms. It rather humorlessly stepped back to avoid physical contact that would have been unwanted, even though it fully understood the friendliness behind the offer. Then, however, it smiled again and extended its hand. Terra shook it with mock formality, which naturally went way over the messenger's head, but amused Dan nonetheless. The other council members were by now on their feet and heading for the door, none appearing moved in any way by the celebratory scenes before them. What sealed it? Dan asked, purely curious. The messenger ushered them towards the door as he replied,
Well, our counselors were unaware of our role in persuading the elders to authorize the cometary intervention, and that detail greatly changed their perspective on both our trustworthiness and the elders' fallibility. It was an astute observation, but the point about looking forward to a progress-driven future of cooperation is what fully convinced the counselors of humanity's positive nature. Diplomatic relations depend on trust, and you earned that today.
All in a day's work, Terra said, playfully nudging Dan's arm to gloat that her spirited words had played such an important role. For his part, Dan paused to consider the point about earning trust. Did people like Godfrey and Cole, the people who made most of Earth's major decisions when it came down to it, deserve trust from anyone, let alone a distant alien race? He tried not to dwell on this, knowing that things on Earth would take care of themselves and that the future was now something to look forward to for all kinds of reasons. Diplomatic relations and a mutually beneficial information exchange between Earth and New Kerguelen were wonderful things to anticipate, but the biggest thing in Dan's future utterly dominated his mind as soon as he stepped out of the council room. "When can we go home?" he asked, picturing Emma's face and the exciting months that lay ahead before their lives would be changed forever in the best way by the arrival of their child. "Soon," one of the messengers said. It stopped walking and quickly revealed a new door in the now familiar manner. "There's just one more room I want you to see first."